The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Streaming now on smart speakers and the Odyssey app. AM 1100 KFAX. Portions of our programming may be pre-recorded. And now back to Lifeline with Craig Roberts.
Welcome back to the conversation. Craig Roberts along with Dr. Jim Grassi. He is the former chaplain of the San Francisco 49ers, former chaplain of the Oakland Raiders, has spent more than 45 years of professional experience in the world of outdoors and working with sports teams. That certainly lends him a very unique perspective on not just working with men, but on such things as morality and character building. And Jim, of course, has got a new book out called Guts, Grace, and Glory. And you talk a lot in the book, Jim, about this connection between the athletic prowess that is developed on the field. And, you know, it's interesting because professional sports these days seems to have a tremendous emphasis on team building, and you got to be all working together to move the ball down the field to make the touchdown. And yet, I wonder if just team building on its own, does that necessarily lead to men building?
The answer is it takes a man to show a man how to be a man. Mm. And we have some NFL coaches and their assistants, which are men of God that have great character, that are showing their men how to be a man. And consequently, by being a man and looking at this idea of unity as coming together in community and putting our distractions outside the locker room, putting our distractions where they belong is when you leave the team facility. If you want to use your platform as an NFL athlete, as a politician, as a business leader to talk about whatever that issue is, fine. But while you're inside, let's keep focused. And that's where the coaches are having problems now building this concept of team. Because to be honest with you, one of the coaches I'm working with right now is having major problems. They're in the run for another potential chance at a Super Bowl trophy. And they have all the players and all the things in motion to do it, and yet their team has been so distracted and so broken up that team fights and all kinds of stuff going on over this issue. It's hard to build team when people have this attitude, it's all about me, which is contrary to what Scripture teaches. Scripture teaches that we need to be unified, that we need to think of others, to respect others, to have the right spirit, that we're supposed to be of one spirit, of one mind. And the coaches are striving, the good coaches, to pull their teams together with that kind of attitude, and yet the unity's not there. And so consequently, we see this year among a number of teams in football that why are they messing up like they are? Why are they so many offside penalties and all? These guys are distracted. They're coming out thinking they can just flip the switch when they hit the field, that they won't think about what just happened in a locker room, that they almost knocked the other guy out. They think they won't think about that, when in reality, it comes back on the field.
Does all of this, too, and I want to take a shift now in our conversation. Mm-hmm. Does all of this to pretend to the notion that the decline in moral character and in that idea of being a role model is indicative of a real failure, a breakdown in the concept of discipleship and mentoring. And I know I get into trouble when I head in this direction because people say, okay, now you're going to start the meddling and you're going to make some comments about the church here, Craig, and you're going to say something like, we don't do the job of discipleship that we should be doing. And if you were expecting me to say that, I have not disappointed you. That's exactly what I'm trying to say. And that part and parcel to the importance of discipleship is this concept of mentoring. Whether we're talking about mentoring pro athletes on the field or fathers mentoring sons and daughters or older Christians mentoring younger Christians, it's all about working toward that common goal of fulfilling the great commandment, the great commission, and making sure that at the end, our lives are a role model, our lives are a reflection of who Christ wants us to be. And it seems as if that, as a broader point, both in society as a whole and in the church in specific, we seem to be missing the mark on that big time.
Well, as you know, Craig, out of my 13 books, about 7 of them have been on discipleship. And my last two, The Spiritual Mentor and Building a Ministry of Spiritual Mentoring, I quite frankly attack the church, and not all churches, but the church has failed in its role, in my mind, to disciple men who are supposed to be the spiritual leaders of their home. And consequently, we've got off into social issues, or we've gone off into other issues, and we're not taking our responsibility as a church, in my mind, to disciple men in from a biblical perspective and understanding what discipleship is all about.
And, Jim, aren't those social issues that you speak of, and the political issues that we've been discussing mm-hmm. about, and the moral issue, don't all of those go back to a core, singular issue, and that is at the heart, at the very center, the crux of the matter is a spiritual issue?
That's right. And that the breakdown of the moral and spiritual fiber in our community. I'm reminding, you know, my mentor for 10 years was Chuck Swindoll, and I think he's given the best definition of character. It's in my book, Guts, Grace, and Glory. And it says, character is doing right on purpose, is the moral, ethical, and spiritual undergirding that rests on truth, that reinforces a life, and that resists the temptation to compromise. Mm-hmm. And today, I think too many of our churches are not talking about this issue of compromise, are not talking about this issue of having a strong a spiritual understanding and biblical background to help raise our children. When 61% of our nation's kids will go to bed tonight without a biological father in the home, and in the inner cities where I came from, Oakland, that's 80%. We've lost our innocence. We've lost our focus, in my mind, as a country, on those spiritual values that we once cherished.
Well, and you know, we hear a lot about the moniker. You sometimes see the kids with the wristbands, WWJD.
Right.
Which, in my radio ignorance, I thought stood for call letters for a radio station for the East Coast. But it actually stands for What Would Jesus Do? And it's important question to ask ourselves whenever we get into that crossroads and we have an important decision to make. But I think beyond that, too, WWDJ, not a set of call letters for a radio station either, but rather What Would Dad Do?
There you go. I like that.
And to think about the kind of mentoring and example setting.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you look at a family that's falling apart these days and there is domestic violence and there's abuse taking place and maybe, a wandering eye and all of it that attends to a family that is falling apart at the seams, I will suggest to you that in almost every one of those cases, we will find one, if not both partners, both the husband and the wife, come from dysfunctional homes that have never seen proper role modeling of what a healthy marriage relationship looks like or healthy parenting looks like. And so as a result, they do the only thing that they know to do, and that is they kind of model, intentionally or otherwise, what they saw happen in their own childhood. And so now that dysfunctionality continues on. And sadly, not being able to, as a young man, say, here I am, I'm at a facing a moral dilemma, I'm at this crossroads, I have to make a decision. What can I gain from my experience, my knowledge, and what I have witnessed and seen to aid me in making the right decision? If you can't say to yourself, well, in this case, this is what my dad would have done, or in this case, my Bible tells me this is what Jesus would do, then is it any wonder that we see so many young people today lost and hapless and hopeless out there?
Man, you're dead on. Once again, Craig, I just love to do interviews with you because your insights are great, and I would take it a step further. I would say that those people that are asking that question, instead of going to the church or instead of going to the Bible, are going and looking at the sports figures, are looking at Hollywood, are looking at the political figures and saying, well, this is what they did. You know, they got away with this. This is how they handled abuse of women. This is how, and so they are the church, and this is why I'm so passionate, and forgive me if I'm just overly articulating this point. This is where I think the church has lost their way, that we're not addressing these issues in the church. We ought to be addressing unity in the church. We ought to be addressing the fact that women are abused in our culture. We ought to be addressing the fact that there are, out of 800,000 police officers, there's some bad apples in the bunch. There's some people that aren't relating to minority groups the way they should. There are politicians who are not connecting with disadvantaged cultures and people that don't have jobs. I mean, these are conversations that we ought to have. And it comes back to being unified. And it doesn't mean that we have to give up our heritage, give up our personality, or the uniqueness in Christ. It does mean that we seek to be unifiers and peacemakers before seeking the selfish personal desires that seem to disrespect and disenfranchise others. It means that we love others as we love ourselves. And that's what's said in Romans 12. And I like it so well what Paul said and wrote to the Romans. He said we're to love ourselves, which a lot of people today do not feel good about themselves for a number of reasons. And boy, we need to reach out to those folks too, you know. And it says we're to love ourselves, but we're to love others. And we're not to think too highly of ourselves. And yet, that very thing is what I see in sports today, not just football, but these men have a, for some reason, they have a bigger self-image of, and self-importance of their role in society than quite frankly, they ought to have.
And the area where they should recognize the role that they have in society with a sense of gravitas, they completely dismiss. And we'll talk about that when we come back. Dr. Jim Grassi with us today in studio. Information on the web about his ministry at mensministrycatalyst.org. That's mensministrycatalyst.org. A timeout, back with some closing comments with Dr. Jim Grassi as Lifeline continues.
Streaming at KFAX.com, Odyssey app.
KFAX, San Francisco, Oakland, San.
Service of Salem Media Group.
We are back, and again, as we head into the home stretch of our conversation, I want to share with you information. Jim's latest book, Guts, Grace, and Glory, you can get it through, I guess, the usual suspects, Amazon.com.
Amazon's the best way to get it now.
And, of course, information about his ministry on the web, available at mensministrycatalyst.org. That's mensministrycatalyst.org. Jim, as you've probably heard, has worked as a chaplain. He served as a chaplain for both the San Francisco 49ers and the Oakland Raiders. born and raised right here in the Bay Area, in the East Bay, in Oakland, and written a number of award-winning books. Again, that latest book, Guts, Grace, and Glory, you can check that out through Amazon.com or through his website at mensministrycatalyst.org. You mentioned, Jim, before the break about the sense that sometimes some of our players think in a haughty fashion more of themselves than they should, and yet, ironically so, there's also the argument that says, and where they should think highly of themselves because of the role model position that they are in, whether they signed up for it or not, because right. of the influential platform that they have been granted, oftentimes completely disregard that. We spoke before our exactly. broadcast began today about the three collegiate players mm-hmm. who were in China as the president is on a 12-day overseas visit to Asia, who has embarrassed themselves, the president, and the country by being arrested by communist authorities for shoplifting. And, of course, China, they don't play. These kids are going to probably wind up spending a little time in jail, I would suspect, before it's all said and done. China will take advantage of the opportunity to make a example out of these young men. And the sad thing is, as China's about to make an example out of them, it's too bad that they didn't think first about the example they should have been setting by not engaging in this kind of behavior. Once again, indicative, I think, of the disconnect that we're seeing, mm-hmm. that leadership role that they're in, that the opportunity and responsibility of properly mentoring young boys and girls who are looking up to these sports figures
right.
is totally lost on them.
Exactly. And that's why I remind athletes, your name, your family name is on your back. Mm. You're carrying your family name on your shoulders. You have a responsibility. Whether you ask for it or not, it is there. You have a responsibility. If you're going to accept that paycheck, you have a responsibility. Today, it was reported that the NFL is losing about $200 million in direct revenues from this whole fiasco. And again, I come back to the comments we talked about. We need to think about team. We need to think about unity and less about self. And that isn't to say that, again, neither you or I are talking about disregarding the issues that are driving some of this. There needs to be discourse on that.
Absolutely.
There needs to be conversation. There needs to be a unifying and bringing together of races, of the political parties and whatnot, if we're going to have a strong country, because we've lost respect globally. As I travel in other countries, and you have too, I'm sure, we don't have the same respect as a nation as we once had. And because we don't respect ourselves, again, coming back to Romans, it says we're to love ourselves, Romans 12, and that we're to love others. And I love the way Paul, in his letter to the Ephesians, put it in chapter 4 about urging us to live life in a worthy manner, worthy of our calling, it says. And then he goes on to say, make every effort to keep the unity of the Spirit through the bond of peace. Through the bond of peace. And we've lost a sense of that peace in this country. Yesterday when I came into town, I have a kind of a thing when I'm out in a restaurant. I don't make any show about it or anything, but we say grace, my wife and I. And most often I'll say to the waitress, after she's taken our order, we're going to pray for our food. Is there anything I can pray for you for? And she literally welled up in tears and grabbed her hands, and she said, will you please pray for peace?
Wow.
With all that's going on in our nation. Here's probably some single parent mom trying to make a paycheck, and with all the stuff, she's in a very divisive community there from a a race standpoint, and she just feels the tension. She feels the pressure. She's very distraught. She said, well, you just pray for peace. And that's what Paul's talking about. That's what Christ talked about, is to look to peace. And I submit to you, if we took all the energies and efforts that everyone's thinking about, trying to make a statement in the end zone or a statement during the anthem or a statement this. We took all that energy and the resources from those men and owners and put it into a pot and stir that pot up what we could do to better this country.
Well, and coming back to the core underlying issue, and that is, and you touched on this, we see this as a social issue. We see this as a political issue. We're failing at the core to see this for what it really is, and that is a spiritual issue.
That's right.
More specifically put, a sin issue. Yes. And if we want to eradicate and reduce acts of racism, we got to go where the heart is. We need to see a change in heart. We need to eliminate sin, because at the core, it is sin that is producing this.
That's
all
correct.
That we see in this tension and in the underlying, just bubbling below the surface anger and angst that's out there, is all the byproduct of sin. And so that's where this comes back full circle, that this is not a job for the NFL. This is not a job for Colin Kaepernick. This is not a job for the NFL players or the NFL owners. This is a job for the church.
That's right.
We need to get on the front line.
That's
and
right.
start talking about the real issues here. And you've used the word distraction several times, Jim, and it's very true. This has created a distraction from the real problem at foot, and the real problem at foot is man's fallen nature, the impact of sin, and our separation from God. And if the church will wake up to our responsibility, that instead of protesting, we need to be out there proclaiming the Amen. Gospel of Jesus Christ. And talking about the fact that racism is a byproduct of sin, and if we address the basic sin nature through Jesus Christ, and man experiences a heart change, guess what? Society will change. Attitudes will change, the unity will come together, and we will achieve that peace that that waitress was asking you to pray about. But the peace doesn't happen just because we have a conference at the UN or say, let's all sing a song together. Peace happens when we have an encounter with Jesus Christ, and suddenly now that peace is a byproduct of our relationship with very God himself. That's the crux of the matter. That's really where the solution to this problem lies. And sadly, we're talking about everything else, but what we really need to be talking about.
Well, you're spot on again, Craig, because the original sin that caused this world to fall was a sin of pride, correct?
Mm-hmm.
It was I want to be a God.
Cain and Abel.
Yeah, and Cain and Abel was a byproduct of Adam and Eve, who was broken. But they wanted to be like God. That's pride, okay? And it comes back again to this unity thing, you and I, see? It's people saying it's all about me. This generation, this culture we're in today, it's about me. I want to feel good. No, I don't want to let you cut in, even though you've had your signal on for a mile to get over in a lane here on the Nimitz Freeway. No. It's about me getting ahead of you. It's about me wanting the best food to be first in line. It's about me wanting to display whatever it is out on that field in front of the television cameras, rather than think about what would God want us to do to show unity, to show team, to show that we're of one spirit and of one mind.
Jim Grassi, as always, we appreciate the time and the insights that you bring to the program. Again, I'll mention his new book, Guts, Grace, and Glory, available through Amazon.com. And again, information available about his ministry on the web at mensministrycatalyst.org. That's mensministrycatalyst.org. Do you still do conferences and speaking engagements? So if somebody eavesdropping says, you know what, I like the cut of this guy's jib, I'd love to have him come in and share maybe at a men's conference, they can reach you through the website?
We're in nationwide ministry, and I still do a lot of men's retreats and a variety of speaking in churches on a numerous topics, and would enjoy the opportunity to be called and considered for an opportunity to speak at their church or at their men's event.
Excellent. Again, details available on the web at mensministrycatalyst.org.
We really wanted to have a presentation to our students that was around boundaries and consent and sexual harassment. We got really lucky and found Real Options.
We teach young people about what it looks like to have a healthy relationship with themselves and with other people. And in doing so, we equip them to make healthy choices that will lead to avoiding those risk behaviors.
When I first heard about it, I thought it was going to be like a sex education, just purely that. It turned out to be teaching like relationship advice and boundaries. I think this program is very valuable for people, especially my age, because learning this will keep a lot of people out of trouble and making mistakes.
Our supporters, their financial contributions help us to be able to bring this material free of charge. When you contribute financially to Real Options, you are partnering with the Lord to bring this information to the kids in need, hands down.
Help sponsor a student. To learn more, go to realoptions.net/donate.
It's heartbreaking. Thousands of people across the Bay Area, often single moms with children, without a place to call home. Nearly two-thirds of those experiencing homelessness say it's because they can't afford rent. For others, a personal crisis, job loss, or addiction forces them to the streets. Cold, tired, homeless, hopeless. But together we can renew their hope and change their lives for a brighter tomorrow. Since 1965, the Bay Area Rescue Mission has been working to restore hope and break the cycle of homelessness. Your gift of $50 can provide a needy mother and children meals and shelter for 2 days. $168 will meet their needs for a whole week. Go online now to BayAreaRescue.org and give a gift of hope and provide the life-changing power of the gospel of Christ. Through your support, the mission's doors are open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, to care for homeless men, women, and children. Give your tax-deductible gift and make a difference. Go to BayAreaRescue.org, the Bay Area Rescue Mission, demonstrating love without limits. Bay Area Rescue. .org.
Are we approaching the last days? Pastor Jack Hibbs from Real Life Radio warns.
The Bible says that in the last days, there's going to be things that are unexplainable. And Jesus warned us that we better be vigilant and we better be believing in the Word of God, because he said that if it were possible, even God's very elect would be deceived.
Download the first chapter of his new book, Days of Deception. When you enter to win an iPad, pre-filled with the complete digital copy of Days of Deception and 4 exclusive behind-the-book videos to give you a deeper dive into how to live in the days of deception and more.
In the last days, Satan will be able to do miracles that are lying wonders and deceiving signs.
Enter to win one of 3 grand prizes and receive the first chapter of Days of Deception.
Log on to KFAX.com, keyword deception. That's KFAX.com, keyword deception.
If you are between 50 and 85 years of age, stay tuned for this very important message. The average funeral is at least over $10,000 to $15,000. Is your family prepared to handle the financial burden after you are gone? Did you know that you may qualify for up to $25,000 in final expense life insurance benefits? These state-approved final expense plans will pay a tax-free benefit to your family after you are gone, regardless of your future age or medical condition. There are no medical exams. Your rates will never increase. Your benefits will never decrease. Don't make the last gift to your family a large funeral bill. Call 800-496-4779 now to lock in your lowest rate, or get a free quote at Compare National now at 800-496-4779. Prepare for the inevitable and the fact of life. Don't leave your family grieving and worried about paying your debts. Call 800-496-4779. That's 800-496-4779.
And now back to Lifeline with Craig Roberts.
Often I think on the topic of taxes as Americans, drawn the conclusion that historically it was things like the Boston Tea Party and the sense of taxation without representation that spurred the American Revolution and brought America to where she is today. My next guest, though, will suggest not quite true. Played a role, to be sure, But in fact, instead of the revolution sparked by high taxes, it would instead be outrage against British attempts to suppress God-given, those so-called inalienable rights that we see articulated in the Constitution that we have today. Some insights now as we're joined by the director of the Center for Military and Veteran Studies at Coastal Carolina University in South Carolina. He's also the author of 16 best-selling books. His latest is entitled By the Hand of Providence, How Faith Shaped the American Revolution. And Rod, Greg, thanks so much for being with us tonight.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
What headed you down this trajectory? I mean, obviously, you spent a lot of your life in the arena of looking at the Battle of Gettysburg in one of your books. You've been very much focused on the founding of our nation and the roots that we have. And I think, to be sure, most of us, certainly people listening to a program like this, see the faith-based roots of our nation. But to take it a step further now and suggest that as much as we've typically understood the American Revolution to be sparked by taxation without representation, actually coming down to something a lot more valuable, quite frankly. This I think, is some new news for folks.
Well, I think it's an old story that needs to be retold because it's been neglected in our day and has been largely forgotten by our nation. But it's really goes to the heart of who we are and what we became as a nation. And the American Revolution was a faith-based revolution because Americans were a faith-based people, and that faith was a biblical one. So the things that you mentioned, taxation, a lack of representation in Parliament, events that were somewhat of a catalyst, like the Boston Tea Party, other protests, all those things were had a role, and all of them were kind of the dominoes falling, but they were symptomatic of something deeper, and that is that the American people, as you put it well, American people were biblical. Colonial American people and the Americans at the time of the Revolution were biblically literate. Now, it doesn't mean that everybody was devout. You had the devout, you had the nominal, you had the uninterested. But the American thought at the time was firmly founded on the Judeo-Christian worldview. The culture was predominantly Protestant. It was overwhelmingly Christian, and it was almost universally Judeo-Christian in its approach. And that was the foundation of American culture, law, and government. So when these events occurred, these controversial events, over a period of time, increasing numbers of Americans came to view King George III and Parliament as attempting to usurp the higher law of God and to force the law of man instead. They saw them as usurping what they called inalienable or God-given rights, rights to life, to liberty, to what they called the freedom to pursue happiness. And they came to view, eventually, in great numbers, King George III as a tyrant. That's why American troops marched off to war in the Revolution under battle flags adorned with the slogan that said, resistance to tyrants is obedience to God.
You take the title of your new book, By the Hand of Providence, from a quote from George Washington. And I think as we think of him as, one of the key founding fathers, the first president of the United States, although with somebody in there actually for a couple of days or something, I forget all the details on that, but widely recognized as the first president of the United States, as we see the role that he played, Valley Forge, all the way through the list, give us some insights in terms of this man in particular and the role that his faith played in taking the risks that he did in the founding of our nation.
Well, and some people have made the case, I think, kind of a weak one, the case in recent years that the presidents of the Continental Congress in those days before the Constitution, during the time of the Articles of Confederation, were in a sense presidents, but they were not president of the United States. Washington was the first. You really cannot overemphasize the influence of George Washington. Now, the American Revolution was really taken forward by the American people. They're often overlooked. And the leaders reflected the worldview, the faith of the American people. So you had the American people, you had their leaders in the Continental Congress, and then you had George Washington, who was really heads above all others. And he was greatly influential in inspiring his officers and troops to stay in this this movement, to stay in this revolution. And he also inspired the American people. And it wasn't because he was a good general, and he became a good general. He became a great strategist, a good tactician, but he grew into that. What inspired the American people about Washington was his character. And that character was based on his personal faith, and that faith was clearly biblical.
And that faith, talk to me about your research in terms of the influence on that faith, on the decisions and the risks that he took personally in the American Revolution.
Well, Washington was a low church Anglican who was very serious about his faith. He was quiet about his faith. He wasn't the kind of man who would sit around like Sam Adams, for instance, and engage or lead a dinnertime theological discussion. He was a low church Anglican. He was he didn't speak in the vernacular of a 21st century evangelical, although his doctrine, personal doctrine that he believed as an Anglican, was certainly in that category of being a historic evangelical Orthodox Christian doctrine. He was certainly not a deist, as some have claimed. There were very few deists, actually, involved among the American people and among the founders, their leaders. The historian, there was a historian in the 20th century, Perry Miller, who spent his life studying the colonial era. He really was a great expert on American colonial life in the colonial era. He described it well. He said that deism was what he called an exotic plant that never took root in America because of the overwhelming influence of the biblical worldview, that Judeo-Christian worldview. So a deist was one who believed in an impersonal God, almost like a force, a force-type creator who launched and jump-started his creation, then walked away from it. That's not the God that George Washington believed in. And he was consistent in both his private writings, which were voluminous, and also in his public statements, which were many, and consistent in expressing that faith, which was clearly, without question, a biblical faith. And so in Washington's decision-making and the things he did, the things he didn't do, really governed by this. You look, for instance, he stands in real contrast to some of the leadership demonstrated by British commanders who went into areas sometimes, particularly in the South, where they could have probably, had they handled the war right, could probably have... Americans were all generally reluctant revolutionaries, and the British in some areas could have kindled a great deal of support, but their behavior, their conduct, really alienated people, and it made Americans in droves go over to the side of the Patriot movement. Well, Washington was contrast to that in the way that he treated his enemies, the way he treated loyalist civilians. He made sure that they were not taken advantage of. He made sure that they weren't robbed and plundered like the British did. There was a real discipline there. He also routinely observed victories by holding worship services. He encouraged his troops to observe the national days of prayer that the Continental Congress called, and there were many of them during the Revolution. He at one time urged his troops to conduct themselves, in his words, and with their behavior, as becoming a Christian soldier. He made sure that the Army was equipped with chaplains. He took that very seriously and encouraged his men to pick chaplains who were strong in their faith. So you see consistently through Washington's words and his behavior, this character, and this character was a reflection of his personal faith.
If you've just joined our conversation tonight, Rod Gregg is with us. He, of course, is the director of the Center for Military and Veteran Studies at Coastal Carolina University in South Carolina. A new book entitled By the Hand of Providence, How Faith Shaped the American Revolution. We'll come back to more of our look at the role of faith in the founding of our nation as this edition of Lifeline continues.
This is Alistair Begg.
And now back to Lifeline with Craig Roberts.
We have been investigating the faith-centered foundation of the American resistance as found inside the pages of this new book, By the Hand of Providence. By the way, for you homeschooling parents out there in particular, I mean, the book is great for anybody, but homeschooling parents,
you're looking for a great book that can be a wonderful teaching tool, you're going to want to go out and pick up a copy of this. Howard is the publisher, available at bookstores throughout the Bay Area. Those one or two still exist, am I right? I'm just checking. And, of course, through Amazon.com. Its author is with us tonight, Rod Gregg. Rod is the director of the Center for Military and Veteran Studies at Coastal Carolina University in South Carolina. By the way, a number of phenomenal books that he has penned down through the years, over 16 of them now all told, on topics of the Battle of Gettysburg, Civil War, on and on the list goes. So check out anything written by Rod. Again, G-R-A-G-G, if you're going to Google his last name. Rod, it's curious. We talk about the notion oftentimes that some will report a number of the founding fathers as having been deists. I find it curious because if we look at the actions of these men and the great risk that they took, the personal sacrifice, it would seem to me that it would take an individual of greater character and a sense of higher calling than just somebody who casually acknowledge the existence of deity out there. It seems to me that most of the actions of these men in the founding days of this nation were people that were willing to sacrifice for a greater good because they knew the God that they served.
Well, that's exactly right. You have to remember when we talk about the founding fathers, the leaders of the American people in the colonial era, at the time of the American Revolution, that they reflected also the worldview of the American people, or they wouldn't have been holding office. And the worldview of the American people, without question at that time, was faith-based. It was the Judeo-Christian worldview. And it's no accident that the Declaration of Independence begins with what it calls a self-evident truth that all men are created equal and are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, namely life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Now, the Declaration of Independence had to be acceptable to the American people who are going to live with it and in many cases going to die for it. And the signers knew that. And they knew they had to have biblical justification for something as big as an independence movement or a revolution. And so that's why the Declaration of Independence is laced with the language of faith. Half of it makes the case against King George III. Because Americans came to view him in great numbers, as did these crafters of the Declaration, as a leader who was unfit to be a ruler of free people because they had come to view him as a tyrant who wanted and intended to usurp the higher law of God and replace it with the law of man. And Americans, being biblically literate, were very conscious of the whole biblical doctrine of submission to authority. And so they were reluctant revolutionaries, and not until the great numbers of them came to believe that he was attempting to usurp or take authority over the higher law of God did they move into the ranks of revolutionaries. And they then came to view him and Parliament to a lesser degree as tyrants who were seeking to repress these inalienable or God-given rights, and they believed they had a biblical and moral duty to resist that. Now, as far as the leaders and those who are deists, that really is something that has been greatly exaggerated in our day, and it really probably reflects more about where American culture is today than it does the historical evidence of that time.
Well, to be sure. I mean, the attempt, I think, too, to take God and faith out of the equation, to kind of neutralize America's stand historically on the position of faith and kind of eradicate our faith-based roots. I mean, let's face it, if you can eliminate that at the foundation, it's much easier then to move forward in not only creating a religion-neutral America, but in some corners, even a religious hostile America.
Well, you know, the great unreported story of our day, of the last 50 years, is the shift in the national consensus or the shift in the worldview of America's leadership from a historic, traditional Judeo-Christian worldview that holds that God is the authority over all things and God should be the central focus of all things, to a man-centered, secular, or humanistic worldview that says that man, not God, is the authority over all things, and that man, not God, should be the center of all focus. Now, that's a seismic shift, and you know why it's having a trickle-down effect in the American population. you can see that the leadership in America in virtually all fields has really shifted in that direction in the field of business, law, government, entertainment, the popular media, the culture, the media, the news media, movies, television, healthcare. It's shifted from this God-centered worldview to a man-centered worldview. And then when you have something like that happens, it means that those who are responsible for conveying information have are uncomfortable with things of faith, particularly a biblical faith. They are they don't understand it in some cases. They're uncomfortable with it. Sometimes they really resist it or even hostile to it. And so for those reasons, I think that the fundamental foundation of America's origins as a nation, which was faith-based, and that faith was the Judeo-Christian worldview, has really almost been it's been neglected. It's and it's to a point that most Americans today, or at least many Americans today, don't know the story.
Yeah, and sadly enough, and of course the irony is we see the manner in which this is demonstrated, the results of which are demonstrated in society and the world around us every single day. I mean, look at the disintegration of what's going on in our country morally and economically. There's proof positive, and even more so than what ought to be a firmer drive to return back to the understanding of our faith-based roots, the acceptance of the reality that colonial America was built on a foundation of biblical faith, and that any time you waver from it, you are going to be open for some pretty scary times, which we find ourselves in these days. By the hand of Providence, how faith shaped the American Revolution, and hopefully will be the guide to the next one. That's my subtitle, my sub-subtitle. Rod Gregg, its author, our guest on this segment of Lifeline. Again, a number of great resources that Rod has penned down through the years for those interested in a real, legitimate view of the faith influence on the founding of our nation. Then, too, again, for parents out there that are homeschoolers, if you're looking for great teaching content, then, again, Google his name, Rod Gregg. You can find lots of great resources, too, all of which available on the web and through Amazon.com. By the hand of Providence. Well, that's going to do it for this edition of Lifeline. Thanks so much for being with us. And if there was anything you heard on today's show that you'd like to hear again or share with a friend, grab a copy of the Lifeline podcast. Simply log on to KFAX.com. That's KFAX.com for the Lifeline podcast. Our producer is Wanda Sanchez. I'm Craig Roberts. Till next time round, remember, just don't keep the faith. Get out there and share it and make it a great evening. So long.
Opinions expressed in the preceding program do not necessarily represent the views of the ownership, staff, or management of KFAX. Copyright Salem Communications, all rights reserved. Let's leave the next generation a better world. Remember, we are called to be salt and light. AM 1100 KFAX San Francisco. Or find us at oneplace.com. Sponsored by Hills.
Three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.